Pyrrhus of Epirus. Today's show is Pyrrhus takes the throne and also gets his first major battle experience. In 307 BCE, at the age of 11, after 8 years of exile, Pyrrhus returned to Epirus. Glaucias, Pyrrhus's protector and the king of the Illyrians, invaded Epirus and placed Pyrrhus on the throne. But his cousin, Neoptolemus, was king and in his mid-20s. The records don't really tell us what happened. There's a possibility there was a co-rule, since Pyrrhus was still underage, or perhaps Neoptolemus was driven into exile, and that appears to be the most likely, since there's a revolt a little bit later. One ancient writer, Justin, wrote that the Epirates turned their hatred of Pyrrhus's family into pity, bringing him back and appointing two guardians to keep the throne for him until he was of age. At any rate, Glaucias' invasion made Epirus now a client state of the Illyrians. They usually were under the control of the Macedonians. There are no surviving records of the next 5 years, 307 to 302. But outside of Epirus during this time, things were heating up. Greece had turned against Demetrius, decided that they'd rather have Cassander. Seleucus was pressing Antigonus, who ordered Demetrius and his army to return to Asia. After that, Cassander decided he would attack Thessaly. In 301 BC, Pyrrhus, now 17, was firmly on the throne of Epirus. But he left Epirus to travel to the wedding of one of the sons of King Glaucias. That's never a good thing. The Epirates, or the Melusians, rose in rebellion, driving out Pyrrhus's friends, plundering his property, and returning Neoptolemus to the throne. We're not sure what triggered the revolt, but it was either or both, because Pyrrhus was a dependent on the Illyrian king, and the lower classes who disliked his uncle may not have liked him either. Pyrrhus did have one kind of personality flaw. It was well known that he was arrogant and contemptuous in attitude towards his social inferiors, so that would certainly work the lower classes a little bit. So Pyrrhus was driven out a second time. King Glaucias was under attack by pirates, so he couldn't help him. Instead, he sought refuge with his brother-in-law, Demetrius, the son of Antigonus, who in 303 had married Pyrrhus's sister, Theomenia. Pyrrhus arrived at the court of Demetrius in Greece in 302. He then traveled with Demetrius and his army to Asia. This was a great opportunity for Pyrrhus, as Antigonus and Demetrius were the foremost Hellenistic generals of the age. Demetrius, in particular, was an expert in the rapidly changing science of siegecraft and was famous for his massive siege towers. Pyrrhus was a keen student of military matters. It is claimed that Antigonus once remarked that Pyrrhus would be the greatest general of his time if he lived long enough. Pyrrhus was present at the Battle of Ipsus, one of the great battles in the Hellenistic period, which took place in 301. Although Pyrrhus had fought in constant skirmishes along the Epirate border, this was a major battle. Ipsus was the largest and most important battle during the successor wars. Antigonus's army was 70,000 infantry, 10,000 cavalry, and 75 elephants. The allies of Lysimachus and Seleucus, their army had 64,000 infantry, 15,000 cavalry, 120 scythe chariots, and 400 war elephants. Now, the standard form of this battle is the same that was used by Alexander the Great and others. You have your heavy phalanx in the middle with your best phalanx forces, your infantry. You put your best cavalry on the right flank and your rest of your cavalry on the left flank. If you're going to use elephants, they're normally out in the front. If you're going to use scythe chariots, you're going to put them out in the front. And then when the battle begins, whoever cavalry manages to take out one side's flank, that gives them the advantage of coming in behind the phalanx and finishing them off. Well, the Battle of Ipsus, the battle went very well for Antigonus. Demetrius blew away the cavalry forces in front of him, and now he begins to chase them. And one of the biggest problems you have is the cavalry sometimes are hard to control. He knew that he needed to stop them at a certain point and return to finish off the infantry of the allies. So when he blew out his opponents, Antigonus was well aware of this is it, we're going to win the battle. But he chased the cavalry too far. They got into a little narrow area. When he finally got control of them to turn them around, Seleucus had a surprise for him. In the return area, he had stretched his elephants across the gap from one side to the other. Now they're chained together, and each elephant has 50 defenders. So when Demetrius turned his cavalry, the charge, they came completely unglued. They weren't used to the smell of the elephants, the noise they made. He could not get through the gaps because they were chained together. And the infantry that he did not have was defend. The other people had infantry. He couldn't break through. And so he is stuck. Problem is, his poor father is there sitting waiting to finish the win, and it never comes. As Antigonus waited for Demetrius to return, his forces were eventually surrounded. Then his units began to desert. Actually, in the Hellenistic age, the various phalanx units have signals that when they realize that they're going to lose, they give the signal and then just march and switch sides so they don't get slaughtered. So that begins to happen. And now his crucial formation, his main phalanx, begins to give way. To the last, the 80-year-old Antigonus bravely tried to rally his troops, looking desperately for Demetrius's cavalry to return and win the battle. Plutarch's account goes like this, quote, "But the old King Antigonus kept his post, and when a strong body of the enemy drew up to charge him, and one of those about him cried out, 'Sir, they are coming upon you,' Antigonus replied, 'What else should they do? But Demetrius will come to my rescue.' And in this hope he persisted to the last, looking out every side for his son's approach, until he was overwhelmed by a cloud of javelins and fell." End of quote. During the battle, Pyrrhus routed the enemy troops in front of him and made a brilliant display of valor. His courage in battle would be a feature that Pyrrhus would have throughout his life. During the battle, the expected place for a young aristocrat such as Pyrrhus would have been in the cavalry and alongside his brother-in-law Demetrius. This would, of course, account for his routing the enemy. For since the battle was unsuccessful, what happens? He was able to escape with Demetrius after the battle. Pyrrhus would have experienced at the Battle of Ipsus both the exhilaration of a successful cavalry attack and the impotence of cavalry when faced by elephants. This latter lesson he took to heart. The ancient writer Fortinius describes him using elephants in order to throw the Roman cavalry into disorder later when he was fighting in Italy. Now the sources for this: Plutarch's Lives by Plutarch, Pyrrhus of Epirus by Champion, Wars of Alexander's Successors, Volume 1 and 2 by Bennett and Roberts, History of Rome by Livy, Epirus, the Geography, History, Topography by Hammond, War in the Hellenistic World by Sherratus, Ancient Warfare Volume 13, Issue 1, and Ancient Warfare, Volume 6, Issue 4. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website sumahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.